Welcome into another edition of Jaguars Reporters. It's Friday, August 5th. J.P. Shadrick, Brian Sexton from the lobby of a Holiday Inn in Canton, Ohio. It's our reaction to the Hall of Fame and Tony Boselli's weekend ahead. That's all coming up. But Brian, let's start with last night's Hall of Fame game. The Raiders outrushed the Jags by 100 yards. They had some key penalties. There were third down issues on offense that marred the opener last night. The Raiders won the game 27-11. Let's start positive, though. Trayvon Walker was on the field and looked the part.
Well, first of all, you get into broadcasting and you don't think that you're going to be broadcasting on a podcast from a Holiday Inn in Canton, Ohio in 2022. So this is something new to me, and just perspective. Thank you for bringing that. Trayvon, on the very first play of the game, we saw both everything that he's capable of doing and things he needs to do better, right? Because he hesitated with his pass rush, and that's been the knock on him, is that he doesn't necessarily have that instinct as a pass rusher. And why would he? At Georgia, they used him in so many different ways. But that offensive tackle he played was 6'7", with arms that stretched to forever like his. And he picked that guy up and threw him at the feet of the quarterback. And then he said in the locker room after the game, "I was so close, I didn't want to miss the chance to impact the play." Well, you already did. But then he reached and he impacted the flight of the ball. Forget the fact that Cole caught it. He did his job.
Right.
I've been saying he's the body of a Clydesdale with the movement abilities of a stallion. You know, I mean, he's just this incredible physical specimen. And to see him right out of the gate make a play like that last night, I know I was excited, and I was sitting a couple of seats down from Trent Baalke in the press box. You know, the guy who made the controversial pick, he was pretty excited too.
Of course, the next drive, he gets home and gets a sack, which was a good thing, and then they got him out of the game after that. So a couple nice drives for Trayvon to get his feet wet a little bit, get out there, and, as we said, look the part. But to actually get home and get the quarterback, that was another great move to kind of straight arm the tackle, and then the quarterback came back underneath him, and it turned into an easy sack.
Well, imagine what happens when Josh Allen's on the other side now, and offensive coordinators have to game plan and figure out who we're going to slide to. Where's the back going to chip? And then we saw an explosive pass rush from Kalavon Chaisson, which was good, and Arden Key finished it off and had two sacks last night. So if you want to talk about coming in waves, you know, we always reference the 2007 New York Giants in that Super Bowl win against Tom Brady, where they just pelted him with everything they had. You want to bring that, and it looked like you have the pieces to get some of that done. So it's exciting to think about what's possible. Yeah, everything didn't look great last night, but when you start thinking about, well, when Josh Allen's on the field, what can we do? There was a lot of positives.
J.P. Shadrick with Brian Sexton as Jaguars Reporters. We mentioned the rushing defense issues. Well, they had offensive issues too, but they were outgained on the ground by 100 yards last night. But as you mentioned, there were a lot of defensive guys that weren't in that will be key in the run defense. Foley Fatukasi didn't play. Josh Allen didn't play. Foye Oluokun, the middle linebacker. Devin Lloyd hasn't practiced yet. I mean, it's going to be hard to stop the run against anyone if those guys aren't in. So you have to have a little perspective in this.
Well, here's a piece of perspective, and Doug Peterson gave it to us in the postgame locker room last night, is that you're talking about, you know, mixing and matching and putting guys into the lineup, A, because you needed bodies, because you had so many guys that didn't play, but you wanted to see people in certain situations. Well, let's just say you got a J2Fele, and he lines up next to, you know, some undrafted rookie free agent, and you're rolling linebackers through. Well, one guy makes a mistake and gets out of position. And it's more likely to happen in that scenario than it is in a regular season, you know, 3rd and 7 situation, because you've got so many guys. Where am I supposed to be? Who am I supposed to get? You saw guys jumping out of gaps last night, just reacting. And that made everybody look like they were, you know, tumbling downhill like a row of dominoes. So it's really hard to evaluate. Although, you know, Doug said after the game, hey, look, if we can't run the ball and stop the run, what are we doing? So you wanted to see at least the basics of that. But I'll give you a little perspective. They had 8 practices, JP, and 2 of those were in full pads. So I think if I'm interpreting Doug Peterson's mindset, last night was a practice.
Kind of felt like that at times. It really did. That's Brian Sexton. I'm JP Shadrick. The offense was without Trevor Lawrence. C.J. Beathard still coming back from that groin issue at the end of the offseason program. Top 3 receivers were out, plus Laviska Shenault, who was off to the side the last couple days of practice before the trip. Evan Engram didn't play. Tyler Shatley and Brandon Sheriff didn't come close to the field. So you were digging deep on offense last night, too. Certainly the quarterback position, Luton got the start. Sloter came in later and had a touchdown pass in the game. But, you know, that was going to be the feel in this game. getting some of those younger guys some reps in that first time out there. And then I think as the weeks move on, certainly this week, you might see some of those guys come back in.
Well, I'll tell you, I paid almost no attention offensively. As I'm making my notes in the game, I'm looking at Jake Luton and these receivers and thinking, okay. So I thought I focused on two guys, Luke Fortner, the center, and Walker Little, the right tackle. And it's tough to evaluate the center until you go back and look at the tape. But I thought Walker Little showed those movement skills that we've been talking about since last year and looked really good. And I asked him last night in the postgame locker room, did you feel like when you had that first team group together on the practice field, you feel like you're making progress? And he said, yes. I said, do you feel like next week when the Browns come to town and you're all out there, the fans will see the progress that they didn't see tonight? His answer was short and sweet. Yeah, I do. I think they will. So if folks are disappointed from what they saw in the offense last night, hold on and let's evaluate it next Friday night when we're likely to see guys, even if it's only for a series or two, and then be able to say, oh, I see what they did with the offensive line. I see what they're doing with Travis Etienne, stuff like that.
All right, we're going to put this game to bed.
Thank you.
And we're going to move forward to Enshrinement Weekend when we return. This is the Jaguars Reporters Podcast. Welcome back to the Jaguars Reporters Podcast, and with the Jaguars season right around the corner, there's no better time to lock in your seats for 2022. Unsure where to sit? Well, Brian, we've got you covered. Join the Jags at TIAA Bank Field Saturday, August 6th. That's tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and you can test out available inventory in person. The Hall of Fame Enshrinement Ceremony will be playing on the big boards as well. Visit jaguars.com/myseat and RSVP today.
I was sitting in the locker room and this big kid with a mullet and a baseball cap came in.
Introduced himself, and I mean, he's 6'7".
327 pounds with the best
feet. He's a good athlete.
He was a ballerina playing
offensive left tackle.
That was Tony's job. His job is to beat who? I don't care if it's Bruce Smith or
Jason Taylor.
Sean Jones.
Willie McGinnis.
Reggie White.
Greg Loy.
If you line up across from him, I don't care who you are, you're going to get blocked.
We just heard audio of the documentary set to be released this fall entitled 71. There was a teaser that went out on social media Friday morning. Interviews with so many people around Boselli discussing his career and life away from football, and a lot of people working behind the scenes for months from the announcement of the Hall of Fame through this weekend and beyond. Patrick Kavanaugh, Dave DeCandis, who's sitting beside us, Everett Sullivan, Max Hockman, Brent Reber, Trent Padilla, Gabby Dalton. The list goes on and on. And the work continues. I believe sometime in the fall this will be released, Brian, and there's been some incredible conversations coming out of this project.
Yeah, so I think the tentative date is to screen it the weekend of October 9th and 10th when the Texans are in town, because that's going to be the alumni weekend, so all of his former teammates will be in for that. It's exciting. It really is to get to this point of the weekend and then to think about celebrating with Jaguars fans in Jacksonville. I go back to 95 when they drafted him, and we all pointed at him because he was a great player in college and said, that's our guy. And then for him to actually be our guy, I mean, when he got on the field that first night against the Packers and stoned Sean Jones, and he didn't get many reps against Reggie White, but I don't think Reggie White wanted to mess with him. He stayed over there on the other side of the line. From that moment all the way through his career, short though it may be, JP, he fulfilled his potential as the number one pick as a player and as a person. He was the leader of the football team on the field and a leader in the community, and this franchise leaned on him and he delivered. I can't think of another player that no one from that class that's ever come through here that you can necessarily say that about. He is a tremendous human being, as you well know, and his family is beautiful. He's a member of our community. He said he was going to be. It's just, to me, it's just full circle. It's amazing that he became what we all hoped he would.
You mentioned Reggie White, and a story just popped in my head that he has told me at least before and probably numerous other people. It was one of the Pro Bowls he went to, and he's lined up at right tackle. I think Vinny Testaverde is the quarterback, and here's Reggie White lined up against him. So it's like the first play of the game. He's like, okay, this is a half-speed Pro Bowl. Not for Reggie White. He went right around Tony and hammered Vinny Testaverde, and Tony's like, sorry, Vinny, my bad. I didn't realize that. It was a little different time of the Pro Bowl back then when they were actually trying to get after it, but that memory just kind of pops in my head. And another one for me, the first time I met Tony Boselli, I had just started with the Jaguars in 2012, and I'm kind of the new guy in the PR department, and I'm excited, you know, all this new clothes and office. And I had brought my I got this in 1992. Alabama won the national championship, right? So I had this.
15 titles ago, something like that?
That was the 12th of now a lot. So, but I had this poster of the returning starters that season, and I got it autographed by all of them on the defensive side, and it was great. All of those guys got drafted. So I had that framed, and I brought it to the office and put it in my office. Well, Tony Boselli walks in to say hi and introduce himself. Hey, how you doing? He looks at the poster. He's like, yeah, I blocked that guy. That guy wasn't good. He was okay, but not great. I blocked him all day long. Like, he went through the whole list. I'm like, okay, it's a little different here. This guy is a totally different animal. That was my first interaction with Tony.
The first time I met him was the Sunday morning. Back then, the draft was Saturday and Sunday. So he was drafted about noontime on Saturday, and by Sunday morning, he was in Jacksonville. I was coming back to the stadium to do some work, and somebody goes, hey, grab that microphone. We're going to interview Tony Boselli. And when he's here already, yeah, he's here. Come on, let's go. We're going to the weight room. I went, where's the weight room? Right? The stadium is still under construction, right? We're dodging forklifts and crates. And there he is standing in a suit with Angie she looked like Miss California. She's wearing this bright red jacket. And you just saw these two, and they were so friendly. They were so genuine and excited to be here. And Tony had some moments when he was a player, when he was just a pain in the ass in the locker room. He just like, man, I don't want to deal with him today. But that's what you expect. You know, he was a cranky offensive lineman, which is what made him great.
He had edge. Yeah. The edge is what makes him great.
But the moment that I first saw him, laid eyes on him, and talked to him, till now, I mean, I just have felt so honored to have known him and to be, you know, friends with him and to see his career go. They're just fabulous people. And I have to say this, too, about Tony and blocking. You talk about all the guys he blocked. I remember early in his career, guys would just watch him. They'd just watch him move and warm up and say, he's going to be great, going to be great. And you just knew he was better than everyone else. No one's ever said that about me. Oh, he's just better than everyone else at anything. Maybe taking out the trash on Tuesday. I don't know. I can't imagine what that's like, where you're just the best. Easy to be, I guess, for him.
That's Brian Sexton. I'm JP Shadrick. It's Jaguars Reporters. We got to go to the Hall of Fame yesterday. Jaguars All Access Television shot there. I had a chance to walk around the hall, and the Boselli exhibits are out. His locker is out there with some items that he sent to the Hall of Fame. A couple of his Pro Bowl jerseys are out. And then you go into the bust room, and there's the little platform where his bust is going to go. And that's really, really cool. And, you know, it's fun to see all the people that have come up from Jacksonville for this, too. And I think you heard them during his introduction before the game last night. I think it was the loudest cheer of all the Hall of Famers, all the Jacksonville and the Jaguar fans that are here to support him. And he talked about that during the game last night, how meaningful that was for him to hear that kind of response last night.
I noticed that too. The Raiders fans, Cliff Branch is obviously deceased. He died in 2018. They gave him a nice ovation. But when Tony came across, I saw him, I think, hesitate and stop. You know, probably the only time he ever hesitated going onto a football field. I think the moment grabbed him. And the great thing about Tony is how sensitive he is to the history of this game, to the franchise and what it means, not just to his family, but to this franchise, which is, you know, the extension of his family and into the NFL. I walked around the Hall of Fame, and I went looking for some of the greats who played left tackle. And, you know, he played in the golden era of left tackles. You think about Orlando Pace with the St. Louis Rams and Walter Jones out in Seattle and, of course, John Ogden in Baltimore. I think Tony was better than all of them. Now you could say, well, you're biased. You know him personally. Sure. But Anthony Munoz came to town in 2000. They used to host the Florida Sports Awards, the Jaspers, they called him. And backstage, we were quizzing him, and we said, who's the best? And remember, everyone said that Anthony Munoz is the best. And he said, you can say that, and I really appreciate it, but if I'm honest with you, I look at him and I think he's better than me. He's the best left tackle to ever play the game. And at that moment, I said, okay, he is. He's the best left tackle to ever play the game. And I'll tell you, I can't imagine anybody ever playing it better than he did. The combination of length and nasty aggression. And look, if this team needed someone to light a fire, needed somebody to spark the way, you wouldn't think the left tackle's the guy. Hey, let's focus on the left. But Tony Boselli was always the guy out front. He was like, follow me, let's go. I love the guy. It's been so much fun to watch him. And I can't wait to see that bust go into the Hall of Fame. And we'll all kid him about how big it is, I'm sure.
you already have, actually, on the video or whatever. So the weekend ahead, we'll be following Tony throughout these events, but not the Ray Nitschke luncheon. That's for Hall of Famers only on Friday. He said he was really looking forward to that. Tonight, Friday night, the Gold Jacket dinner. Mark Brunell officially will put the jacket on Boselli. That's a sit-down dinner before the program this evening. And then Saturday, the enshrinement ceremony at 12 noon at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium. Boselli is scheduled to speak 5th out of 8. Speeches are set to be 8 minutes or less. They said they're going to start the music Oscars style if you get to 8 minutes and try to force you off the stage. Our friends in the desert, Brian, might have Dick Vermeil as the favorite to cry tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Dick, and look, the older we get, the more emotional we get. But Dick Vermeil is one of those guys who loves the game. And there's an old saying in football, and it's the memories that make us rich, right? It's the people, it's the experiences, it's the places and the things that we've done in this game. And Dick Vermeil has done a lot of them. And I would say he'll be emotional. But I'm kind of anxious to hear Tony, you know? I mean, I know that they've practiced this thing and they're going to really hold it to 8 minutes. I'm anxious to hear it. And you mentioned Mark Brunell. And I have to tell you, Those two were thick as thieves from the very beginning. I mean, they bonded and became friends. I don't know if it was the Pac-12 thing or they had some friends in common. But they rode to work together every day from Marsh Landing to Jacksonville in the time that they played together. And they were just always together. And so when people started asking, hey, Tony, who's going to be your presenter? I thought, there's no question about this, is there? I mean, it's going to be Mark Brunell. And so I'm excited to hear Mark. I'm excited to see those two together. And again, it's the full circle. It's the culmination. You know, we put all of our hopes in them. And yeah, they didn't deliver Super Bowl. I get it. But they gave us great memories. They gave us a history of this franchise that we lean on to this day. Through the lean years, we pointed to those years and bonds, right? Bonds. Fred Taylor is your friend. You know, Tony Boselli, Jeff Loggeman, those guys. And Mark and Tony represent those. And I'm grateful. I feel very, very honored, blessed to have been a part of it all. And this weekend is it's the icing on the cake.
Yeah, and just to be a part of this weekend is just an honor as well. To be involved, be around it, to get to see it in person. And I can't wait for the next 2 days ahead, and we'll see who's next after that. That's a conversation, I think, for another time. Let's get through the first one before we really start digging deep into the next one.
Yeah, are we going to hang a banner or something in the studio that says Tony Boselli Hall of Fame? I mean,
It's in his contract now, I think.
Oh, no, I'm just teasing him, but he'll get some good-natured ribbing, and then he'll come back and do what he does, because football and family and faith to him are the important three things, and he's enjoying this, and I imagine this whole year is going to be incredibly special for him.
Enjoy the weekend, Brian. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've had fun. Thank you.
Brian Sexton, I'm JP Shadrick. Thank you for listening on the official Jaguars Podcast Network. This is Jaguars Reporters.